The Outfield was having its premiere in conjunction with the All-Star Game. Eisner used their time together to assess Ross as a possible replacement for Katzenberg, who knew nothing about the Aspen invitation and didn't attend the Angels' premiere. Roth passed muster. Eisner was reassured that if necessary, he could replace Katzenberg at the studio immediately. On the Disney plane back to Los Angeles from Pittsburgh, Eisner discussed the pros and cons of Ovitz with Jane. The pros were that he thought Ovitz could ease the burden on him, and that Hollywood and Wall Street would be reassured by Ovitz's appointment. At the time, probably no one else in Hollywood had the visibility and the respect that Ovitz commanded. Landing him would doubtless be considered a coup for Eisner. The cons, or con, was Ovitz's ego. As Eisner told his wife, "You have to understand, I don't want to feel as if I'm in competition with anybody. My biggest question is whether he could tolerate being number two and whether he would be a team player." Still, Eisner said he'd readily cede authority to Ovitz. "The truth is that I'm very happy to have all the divisions report to him so long as he lets me know what he's doing," he told Jane. "If we can agree on that, it could be fantastic." "My interest is simple," Jane replied. "I want your life to be simpler. Don't you think this could help?" Later that week, Eisner agreed to an interview with two Los Angeles Times reporters, Claudia Eller and Alan Citron, in which his comments were flagrantly at odds with his real feelings about Katzenberg. As public relations chief John Dreyer sat by, Eisner said that there was no one he trusted more than Katzenberg. "He is very supportive of the whole company, a team player," Eisner said. Eisner volunteered that in their long history together, "We've never had a fight. He is clearly the best golden retriever I ever met. He's the best person to follow through on a project, an idea, or slate of ideas. I did 100% of the thinking, and he was the one to get something done." Eisner was dismissive of Wells' role and made it sound like he was doing Katzenberg a favor by not promoting him to the presidency. "I don't want Jeffrey at the moment to worry about corporate insurance, and that's what Frank Wells did. He kept the machine running. I want to keep my stars in star roles." "I know I'm going to regret having done this," Eisner told Dreyer after the interview ended. Indeed, he had managed to demean Wells' contribution, as well as relegate Katzenberg to golden retriever status, a point he reiterated in an interview with author Tony Schwartz, whose notes read, "Jeffrey was my retriever. He was the end of my pom-pom. I'm the cheerleader." Eisner, along with Roy, saw a rough cut of the animated feature scheduled for the following summer, Pocahontas. Though Lion King continued to do phenomenal business at the box office, Eisner was worried that Disney animated films would now be held to an impossibly high standard after the unbroken success of Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and The Lion King. Both Eisner and Roy had problems with Pocahontas, especially Eisner, who worried that the second act lacked momentum. He also wanted Pocahontas to speak English throughout the film, rather than her Native American tongue with subtitles, and wanted changes to one of Alan Menken's songs. Menken was now paired with composer Stephen Schwartz. Eisner passed his comments on to Katzenberg. A few days later, both Ovitz and Eisner were attending investment banker Herbert Allen's